Two, one. Is this thing on? It's always on. Where am I? I'm actually staring out the window of an incredible high-rise in La Paz, Bolivia. But our guest today joined us on the bus. He was not in La Paz. He was somewhere on the road between Cusco in Peru and La Paz. And his name is Daryl Fish. Before we jump into the episode, as Brandon likes to say, a little bit of housekeeping. Is that Brandon or Sam Harris? I'm not sure. We're not Sam Harris. We're Brandon and Daniel from On the Bus Podcast. And the thing is, we're actually on a bus traveling through South America. And we're documenting the entire thing. We have a team with us. And where can you see those documentaries? Well, we're not on Netflix. We're on YouTube, the second most searched engine on the entire internet. And there you can find our most recent episode, episode 11 of the Save the Dina Tour, which is documenting our zany and wacky journey, trying to get down here, talk to people on podcasts, and do some incredible things. We have great things on there, bus stops, we have podcasts, we have adventures. Go check it out. That's On the Bus Podcast on YouTube. Now, before we hop into the episode, we're going to take a deep dive into the psyche of the human being. What about the psyche of the human being? Well, the thing is, we're all consumers. We all buy, we all shop. In order to stay alive each and every day, you have to buy food, you got to wear clothes. And where do you get that? Well, most of us, almost all of us, get it from Amazon.com. In fact, I think it's the most searched thing on the internet at all. If not, don't listen to me. Who cares? Go to our website, hop into our Amazon portal, and you can support our podcast by clicking one-click shopping and buy anything you need through Amazon. You already shop there. You might as well use our portal. And to do that, you simply go to onthebuspodcast.com. It's in the footnote, it's in the header, it's in a bunch of the sections. Click it, favorite it, and do your shopping through there. We get a percent, and that supports our podcast, our tour, our travel dreams, and bringing you incredible content and people. Now, for the past 10 days, you haven't really heard from us. Why is that? Well, Brandon and I have been secretly laying in bed with diseases, funguses. Well, there were no funguses.
Not gay stuff.
Ripped off toes. Brandon's toe almost ripped off completely in a sandboarding accident. My leg almost came off my hip. And thank goodness for Peruvian healthcare. Wait, no, they didn't help us at all. What did help us was CBD oil from Green Roads World. They gave us a bunch of this stuff to bring down. And because Brandon's toe was almost ripped off, he started using topical cream on his toe the entire way. I was using topical cream on my back. We were taking gummies and pouring down the tincture down our throat every single day. How does CBD work? If you're unfamiliar, it's the cannabinoid receptor, in the marijuana plant. It is not psychoactive at all. It is incredible for inflammation. It is incredible for recovery from workouts. And it is incredible overall just for your health. I highly suggest you take it. And if you want to buy some, head on over to greenroadsworld.com, where their products, because you're on the bus, because you're a member, you get a 15% discount, and your health can finally go back to the way it was, or needs to be, or can be. Head on over to greenroadsworld.com, enter in On the Bus, no spaces, one word, On the Bus, for a 15% discount. Whew, okay, clear that out of the way. It's an early morning here in La Paz. We've got some adventures coming. Today's episode is our good friend Daryl Fish back for a second time. Daryl Fish is one of the best poker players in the entire world. Not only that, he's a thought leader in the community. Daryl also had the foresight to help donate to this project of ours. He was one of our most important pledgers in our Kickstarter. He did something called a good and evil day, in which you get to pick a day of good or a day of evil. Daryl actually hopped on the bus with us and came down here. Now, the cool thing about that is he joined us. The poor thing about it is that he decided to leave. In this episode, we touch deep on why he left. Here's a hint: his brother recently died, and we get into that. This episode also dives deep into death, fear, overcoming his fear and anxiety from being on the bus, and from Daryl's perspective, we get what it's like to be in a day in the life on the bus. What a powerful episode. Daryl's the first person we kicked off the bus early. So, let's hop in. Daryl, Brandon, myself, hello. We're back on the bus.
Unreal. Fine, I'll take less BHP next time.
Is he first podcast of a return guest down here?
I think so.
No, Diego.
Oh, Diego. But you're number two.
Oh, you're number two, yeah. Oh,
well, you wanted me. I got to take a number two, so I'm number
two. You've been taking a lot of number two since you've been down
here. He did that on purpose. He wanted me to say you're number two, so you felt a little worse about yourself today.
It's true. I was starting to feel good, so I'm glad you knocked me back down a peg. It's important.
Daryl Fish, you have the power of awareness. You got to be careful what you say around him because he's aware.
I am aware. Wolf.
I wish more people got that joke.
Yeah, they don't.
Because Werewolf's the greatest game.
It is. It's the greatest game alive.
We have it here with us, but we don't play it enough.
We don't need the cards even to play. All we have to do is write down the characters on pieces of paper and pass them out.
But what's the minimum amount? I know.
To have fun? Seven. You can play with five.
If I fight him all the time, he's like, we can't do it.
I think you need 12, to be honest with you. I think you need 12 to play that game.
No, you don't need. No. You can. I've played with seven or eight and had a great time.
Seven or eight really qualified people to play.
Yeah. But obviously, the more the better. 12 to 20 is
until
like
you reach like
range.
20 people and you have Lucy and Manny on the show, Lucy and Manny playing. They have the talent, but they just didn't have
the heart.
It. Yeah.
No, like they were good. Like getting up there, like, I'm Brandon's mom. And it's so really nice that all of you guys came out tonight. This is redirecting everything away. Even when she was a werewolf, too. She just redirected right away. It's so great to have my son back home, you know, for his birthday and be here. Very wolfy.
Super wolfy.
Until my sister gets up and just says, I don't know why you guys are playing with Reese's, because every Reese is going to cheat at every game. There's no point of him playing.
That's what a Reese wolf would say.
But it's so happy to have you down here.
It's happy to be here, even though I'm leaving. It is happy to be here.
And you say you're coming back, but yeah. I trust you're coming back. And I have trust issues.
He said 90%, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which actually is a totally arbitrary, meaningless number, because it's either I do or I don't, so it's actually pointless to come up with a percentage.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very strong leaning, because I don't see why.
I know you said you want to come to Chile. Why Chile is the place you really want to visit?
Wine Chile is the better question.
Oh.
That's the main reason.
I thought I could have been mistaken in what I said, so perfect.
Yeah, Malbecs is a big part of it, and also it would just eliminate a big part of why I'm leaving, which is the anxiety that kicks in when I'm riding on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So I could just like be part of the thing without having to maybe deal with as much of the roughness, which maybe I should deal with. I don't know, but it's been a little too much for me right now.
It's going to be a good thing for you in Chile. Chile has like the best roads in South America. So especially if you're traveling down that Panamericana from northern Chile back to Santiago, clean roads, smooth roads.
That's what we like.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It makes
mud and boulders, not so much.
It gets me worried to know how much PTSD, you know, me, Daniel, Max, Patrick actually have that, you know, I think Shay mentioned yesterday, like, oh, you stayed pretty calm, you know, the bus getting in the mud, you walked over to town, busted toe, and it was like, yeah, maybe I'm just prone to it, used to it, but that could also be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Could be a lot of repression right there.
Yeah.
What do you think? Give us your breakdown of what you've seen.
So many things. Of what?
What you've seen. How we are, who we act, what we do. You're an aware person. We want to know what comes out of your eyes, your voice.
Well, you guys are obviously doing a cool thing here. A unique thing, an interesting thing. Putting yourself in uncomfortable situations, which I think is good and healthy. Making connections with cool-ass people around a cool part of the world. Super cool. Kind of going with the flow of it more than rigid plans, which is kind of cool. I didn't really expect that, but I kind of like that element of it, of like, let's just see what happens. I mean, it's been short-lived, but still, you know, super interesting to get an inside look on the function of this whole project and where you guys are headed with it, and the creativity behind it and some of the content you're creating is super cool. So it's been a nice little view.
If you could have your imprint on, like, let's say you were doing this, how would you do it?
Well, I'd probably spend more money, but that's because I'm lucky in poker to have more money to spend on stupid shit like a fancy bus. I would have done it a little more luxuriously, which is kind of going against the point in a way. But otherwise, I think I would do a lot of the same things. Just kind of find some path, a basic, you know, foundation for where you're headed, and then just kind of find things along the way and have a few key elements and key plans, but otherwise kind of let things come up as they will. Otherwise, you might close yourself off to something great. And otherwise, I feel like I would do a lot of the same things you guys are doing. It's seems like you have a good balance between, you know, having fun partying and then finding important ways to, you know, create valuable content. And yeah, and inviting friends down to share it is pretty sweet too. So yeah, it's pretty great.
Now, I don't think a lot of people know why you're here specifically too. I mean, you helped, you know, pledge during our Kickstarter, a huge important reason why we're able to, you know, fund what we got to do. And I'm interested to know how much more time you're going to put into your Good or Evil Day. I know you were thinking about switching it to an Evil Day.
Well, I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Well, like, explain what a Good and Evil Day is for our listeners.
Well, I can explain it. Basically, so they did a Kickstarter, and you guys did a Kickstarter. They, you, whoever. And certain level of donation qualified for certain benefits. I donated a certain amount of money. Not huge, I would say, but, you know, I'm happy to contribute it. And I get to make you guys do something either beautiful or fucked up. And I've kind of been waffling on that. And under the influence of
the other good friend,
Steen, you know, I've had some reconsiderations. And now I'm leaning in the different direction that I was originally. And
he's
nervous because he's got a chance to come down here. He can see what he can pick on in terms of what can really... Living an evil day.
Yeah, and I was listening to a Jordan Peterson talk last night about...
Did that give you inspiration?
It did, actually, because he was suggesting the idea of, as part of development, trying out playing with different modalities in terms of personality. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself a pretty good and kind person. And so I kind of like the idea of experimenting with darkness and evil and the shadow that we all have, because it's certainly there for me, for all of us. And so listening to that kind of felt like maybe I was on the right track with trying to expand my thinking outside of, well, let's all be lovey-dovey all the time.
You're looking to become evil. You're looking to pull out your evil side for us.
Yeah, yeah, for you guys, because you can handle it, you know, and hopefully, maybe, possibly. And but, yeah, I want to start experimenting with different sides of personality in general. And so that'd be a cool way to start it off, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm curious what he's thinking.
But. Yeah. Oh, we know what Steen's is. I don't want to say it. I really want people to just be shocked on film.
Yeah, I don't think we should spoil any of that. Or mine. I have pretty solid idea on what I want you guys to do, but I'd rather it just be a...
When you said Jordan Peterson, I thought you were going to have us go into some sort of professional talk in the middle of La Paz, Bolivia, and hold up some signs against whoever's speaking and become the
There's no such thing as free speech. Yeah. Free speech is dead.
It'd have to be...
Nothing that crazy. I wouldn't want you to get shot. So I would keep you out of the political sphere of Bolivia, but
that's nice.
But in terms of, you know, just dipping our toes into our shadow side, I think is an important thing to do every once in a while.
Did you experience that in American University? Did you go to university?
I did not go to university.
No.
No.
I know that about you.
Yeah.
How outlier of you?
Not very.
So then after high school, how did you get to poker? What happened there?
Well, to be fair, I think a lot of that can be recounted on our previous podcast, but it was kind of a natural progression. I got into Magic the Gathering.
Okay, yeah, I remember that
and
one.
And then from there, a lot of Magic players got into poker. It was kind of an organic process. And so, you know, me, Ruthless, our good friend Dom, we got into it together, actually. So, yeah, and then it just took off from there. It was like I didn't have much of a path or direction in life, so it seemed like a good opportunity to dive really into something, and that's what I did, and it worked out.
Do you think, like, not having that path is what led you to seeking out some of the things that you seek out on a daily basis? You have a very unique path, like we were discussing.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's kind of interesting to kind of create your own way and not necessarily fall under the influence of any one person, ideology, entity, whatever, and kind of just... listen and observe different things and different people and see what resonates with your heart and kind of take bits and pieces of different things and put it together for yourself. And so that's kind of what I feel like I've done, and feel like it makes me a pretty unique person. I don't know, that's my perspective on myself, though, but I think some people would agree with that. I think it led to being a very open-minded person in general, which I think is a good quality, and I enjoy people who are open-minded, so, yeah.
It's like open-minded people find each other. Classic.
That's your whole thing about, like, the gene. What's that gene you always talk about?
The 7R gene. There's a gene variant called the 7R gene, and what it is it's found in groups of people who, the further you get from China, the higher percentage of the population you get. So it's people who ended up exploring into different lands, and the further they got, the higher percentage of the population that has this gene variant. So it's a gene variant that fitness-wise came out of exploration for new places. So China near zero, when you get up to Alaska, like 5-7%, North American Indians, 12-20%, as you get into Central America and then down into South America, like 75% have this gene variant, and they call it, man, I hate this, the Wonderlust gene, hashtag Wonderlust.
That's super cheesy, but it also kind of makes sense.
So. Yeah, in a thematic way, you can kind of see the type of, we had this discussion, the type of people you see traveling are often people from those different types of places. Like, how often you see Japanese people who, or Chinese people who are backpacking anywhere?
A decent amount, actually. I saw quite a few this trip.
Well, did you see them because Cusco is a major hub for people going to Machu Picchu?
That's probably part of it, yeah. Yeah, the major, like, major tourist
backpacking,
hub.
Yeah. Like, just
right,
saying,
not roughing it. No. Yeah.
No.
Like, think about how many Argentinians have that gene.
Yeah.
All of them?
Maybe all, yeah.
We have this thing where Argentinians are just all in every place that we explore, and they love selling eco jewelry.
Yeah, they come from a very accepted bohemian lifestyle in their culture. Yeah. It's not like looked down upon. Like, okay, we're gonna travel. We're gonna, you know, live as we want to do, live where we want to go. And here's a place, a way to make money if we have no skill to make money. We're gonna make custom jewelry. It's like, very similar to bohemian style, though.
How often you quantify that like travel and openness is genetic? Have you thought about it, something like that?
I don't see much value in quantifying it myself. I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about, but it's not going to, like, do much for me in terms of value. But I think it's interesting because it relates a lot to people who have a psychedelic experience, especially in mushrooms. There's been studies that show that a year later, after studies with psilocybin, people have a development in their mind to be more open-minded and more open to things like travel and stuff like that. So it actually might be a similar genetic expression to the 7R gene, just in a different mechanism. So it's kind of interesting that there might be a natural proclivity to that that can be emulated through the psychedelic experience.
Well, because there's so many things that could turn and flicker those genes on and off. And especially with psychedelic studies, it's so hard to tell if something like that could contribute. It couldn't, you know, enhance those genes getting kicked on and turned on. Back to what you said, what's interesting about that 7R thing, the people who are expanded farther away from one certain location, is that also their genes wouldn't be as diverse. Because the more chance people had to multiply together in one place, their genes had time to become more diverse. But the farther they've expanded off, the less they've had time to become more diverse. I know, I got that from Sapiens.
Great book. Yeah.
Noval, what's his name?
Naval Ravikant.
Mm. No, wait, is that? I thought it might be the crypto.
Ravikant.
Right?
No, that's the crypto guy.
That's the San Fran.
Wait. So wait. CEO. VC. I misspoke.
No. It's, I didn't know the name or the proper science. Yeah. Shame on me.
Yeah. Fuck. We're not scientists. Good reminder.
Well, you have this, you know, viewpoint of psychedelics. Like, what's your most profound experience that led you to openness involving psychedelics?
Well, my first major experience with psilocybin was the turning point, I would say, in terms of seeing things from a bigger perspective. My first experience with MDMA, which, you know, you guys were there with me, mm-hmm. that was the most intense experience of my life up to that point, and opened me up to a lot of different feelings and a more loving way of being, I guess, even though that might sound a little weird. But psilocybin was the kind of you know, the substance that got me to leave my identity behind for a little while and just see the world from a set of eyes that wasn't attached to conditioning and whatever biases and other things that my Daryl Fish identity has throughout the day. So that was that's really what opened me up the most.
It's the hardest to throw out and leave behind because I think like today I was pissed off or upset about something, but like these things completely out of my control. There's nothing I can do, and if I'm still going to be hard on myself and be frustrated or mad. Like, it has to do with nothing. There's nothing I can do, but still, this persona you take on of Brandon or Daryl, Daniel, it hinders you some way.
Big time. And a lot of ways. I mean, it doesn't. It allows us to function in the world and play the game that we're in and all that, but it's important that we don't get too caught up in that part of ourselves because we're much bigger than that. And so to see things from a bigger perspective and not let our conditioning and all that other shit get in the way of seeing things clearly, I think is super important for a lot of reasons. So, yeah.
It's weird because you have all these things that you've done up into this moment in your entire life that have kind of made you who you are, all your experiences as a child. But yet right now you're none of those things. You're the like the faint memories of them existing. They've created who you are. It's hard to kind of separate that past because, you know, you are the sort of culmination of all those experiences. And it's kind of fascinating to be in an experience and recognize that your identity is being built off of this right now, and it's based off the past, but also try to separate them.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance, but it's part of developing awareness, and for me, it's fun. I enjoy playing with those things, so I think it's overall beneficial for us.
Yeah, I can still look at it and laugh at the end, saying, oh my God, I said that and did that. That's just either not me, or that it's a side of me that I know exists that gets mad or upset when something's out of your control, but there's nothing you could possibly take there. There's nothing you can do, yet I'll still be harping on myself, but still look back later and say, oh my God, I can't let myself get to that levels.
Yeah.
But outside of psychedelics, I mean, there's meditation, writing. I mean, what else do you got?
More drugs. anything that puts you in flow, you know, that takes you away from your mental, you know, your mind, your small mind especially, and puts you in just presence and tunes you into whatever experience you're having, because that's the most important thing at the end of the day, is being present 100% for whatever it is you're doing, which I'm not claiming to be perfect at that by any stretch, but that's what I strive to do, and that's kind of where all my practices now are leading, hopefully, is to closer and closer to that place.
One of the things for this trip for me is that I've sort of taken on things that I used to be scared of, like fears, and I've looked at them and I've tried to say, okay, like how can I put myself, he's almost forced me essentially, but how can I put myself in this position to get over to get over that fear, right? It's a different tactic I used to look at as an avoidance, but I'm curious for you, you know, how do you identify with fears and what do you do to sort of,
then we got to come back. I want to hear what crazy fears I put you through.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a big part of it is acknowledging what you're afraid of and not running from it, most importantly. Otherwise, it'll just fester into something much worse than simply fear, which we can all use and grow from. And just looking at things rationally and seeing it, you know, again, from big picture. And is this fear based in something I can control or not? If it is, how can I control that? What can I do to kind of change my thinking? And if it isn't in my control, then why the fuck am I worried about it? And why am I really afraid? If there's nothing that I can do, then I shouldn't concern myself with it. You know, just let it be, basically. So, yeah, I'm to the point now where I don't have a whole lot of fears that...
Well, this bus.
I think that control me too much. No, yeah.
But so, yeah. He's going to come back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, we all have them, and I do for sure. You know, most of your listeners, probably none of them know this, but I lost my brother last year in a car accident, and so that, you know, has been a process, and definitely has developed some things in me that some I've worked through, some I'm still working through, some I might not even know about yet. One of the things that this trip has brought up for me is kind of anxiety being in potentially dangerous driving situations. So I noticed that, you know, being in the bus, being on bumpy roads, seeing the edges of cliffs, all these things have been kind of triggers for me, which I didn't really know would happen until I came down here. So in a way, it was really important for me to notice that. But it's been a little bit overwhelming, and that's part of why I'm leaving early. But I think it's important to not only acknowledge, notice, but confront that. And I'm not gonna like never ride a bus again or never get in a car again, you know, because that would be stupid. I'd limit my life. So I think it's important to find a balance between confronting your fears in a way that can help you grow through them, but also, you know, not letting yourself go fucking crazy because of the fears either. And so it's a delicate balance between those two places, I think. So yeah, it's been interesting.
That's probably, like, I remember when I first heard about your brother passing, and for me, it hit me super hard. Just because being your friend and just feeling like some sort of connection to you, how do you cope? How have you been coping with that? Like, genuinely curious.
Well, again, it's a process. And when it happened, I was lucky to be surrounded by, you know, some of our friends who were very supportive and very just emotionally open and able to just be there, you know, because that's what you need really in that time, I think, is people who can just hold your hand and like let you cry or whatever it needs to be done, and not put themselves into it, but just be there as a person that you can share your energy with in a time when it's really needed. So that was really helpful, just being around supportive friends who are basically family as well. And then also just internal work. A lot of the things that I do anyway kind of help me deal with, well, psychedelic experiences have taught me a lot about death and to not really see it as the same way that I think most people do.
Well, first of all, in our society, no one talks about death.
No, I say all the time. It's such an avoided topic.
Right, and which is crazy because death and sex are the two things that every one of us basically experience, yet we talk about it almost none, especially death. We tiptoe around it. We're so afraid of it because it's what drives us mad at the end of the day, and which to me, that's like going back to the fear thing. You know, if we live our lives thinking, oh God, I'm going to die someday, oh God, I'm going to die someday, our whole life is limited by that fear.
Yeah.
So many things will be limited when they don't need to be, because we're gonna fucking die, whatever that means. I don't know. I think it means we just go to another realm of consciousness or being, or there's some, you know, existential soup that we become part of again from where we came to begin with. So I don't, and it was weird for me, like the, you know, the sort of funeral ceremony we had, it was strange being one of the few people who didn't seem obviously as bothered by it as everyone else. And it's easy for people to look from the outside and say, oh, he must be a fucking sociopath or must not have emotions or anything like that. But it was more like I had already come to terms with it and kind of accepted things and moved on a little bit. And not that I'll ever move on completely, but I know that letting myself live in those emotions isn't going to like do me any good. So I had already worked through stuff. So yeah, it was strange to be in this process with a totally different viewpoint than the rest of my family, especially. And they're having a lot more trouble with it than I necessarily am, but I don't think death is a bad thing necessarily. And it's obviously an important and necessary thing that happens to us. And I see it as just part of the energy passing along. We're animals. Like, animals die, you know. It sucks when it's an animal that you love or feel close to.
And we kill a lot just to eat every day.
Yeah, exactly.
People are disconnected from even that aspect.
Right. And I view humans as a species of animals. So to me, it's like, yeah, it really fucking sucks when it's like your dog or your brother. But at the end of the day, it's got to happen to somebody. And going back to Jordan Peterson, I know I might harp on him, but he's I think fantastic.
I watch a lot of his YouTube videos.
He last night, another talk I was watching, he said that a very good goal to have is to be the person who has it together at a funeral. And that hit me so hard because I felt like I was that person in some ways. And someone, you know, I think needs to be to help the other people who aren't necessarily coping as much and maybe need a little more support. And so I like that concept of realizing that, yeah, we're going to die, but let's like acknowledge that and process it in a healthy way instead of, you know, turning our back on it and never thinking about it.
Well, let me ask you something. You said, you know, that your family was a little struggling for it and you wanted to be the person kept together. If you could say something to your family right now, what would be the thing that you would say to help them understand?
I don't think there's anything I could say because I have, you know, tried or done what I think is good or supportive, but people have different emotional and psychological processes, and especially from the generation previous to ours had a much different way of thinking about the world and life and death. So there's only so many times I can say it's all going to be okay before like it's just not going to hit home the same way it would with, you know, someone like you guys necessarily. And so I think it's just giving them space and love and time and support in whatever way I can. And it's a tricky game to play, but I'm trying to do my best with it.
Yeah, I try. I know that I try to avoid the thought of death unless it's about trying to live forever, but that's a whole different conversation. But it's still something that I've seen. Like, I completely identify with what you just said about other generations, where I see the way that my parents treat death. I see the way that their family treats death. Like, they absolutely love this person, and it's really awestruck for them to lose somebody, and they still almost consider them a part of their life.
Well, they want to hold on. It all goes back to attachment, I think. We develop, you know, feelings for someone, an emotional bond, and then we have a hard time letting go of anything in life, let alone a loved one. It's a really hard process. I'm still going through it for sure, but it's absolutely necessary to be able to let go of things. Both your emotional state sometimes and other people, objects that you lose, just to not be so attached that when something does happen that it's like ends your world, you know, because we can't let that happen. It's not fair to us or the other person. It's not what they would want. You know, my brother wouldn't want me to like sit around and wallow all day, every day. And I did for some days for sure, and that was necessary, but to continue living my life. And maybe just, I think if we use death as inspiration and motivation, that's the greatest like value of it, I think, is to say, okay, yeah, look, our time is limited, so how the fuck can we act on that in a way that, you know, we have that awareness but we're not afraid of it, and we use it as like, okay, let's like do the most we can and be the best we can, because it's all gonna end someday.
Yeah, it seems like those small things about our everyday world and our everyday life, I can have enough money for this, and I have to have time for that. But in the end, when it doesn't matter, and then you're upset when you've lost that person who had all those same thoughts, those menial thoughts that were just social creation for our society, and this whole thing about society, oh, this is what we need to do, this is how we're going to do it, so everything works, and that's the only thing we're focused on, then we're so focused away from, like you said, you know, the basic things that make us human beings or animals, sex, death, and just, or also just eating, gaining resources.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah,
that's it in the end. And then you can, at the end, that's where the selfishness comes in, where someone's like, oh, I miss that person. Oh, why are they dead? Yeah. Why didn't I do anything
it's
more?
It's almost like you're making it about yourself. Yes. Which is so fucked up from my perspective, but also totally understandable, because
the lesson you have to go through.
It's very tough to not have that happen.
How do we teach that, though?
Judge people necessarily for that, but I see it as a very unhealthy trend in our humanity to not be able to let go and to attach someone so much to ourselves. Same with ideology. It's the same concept. You know, people get so attached to an idea that they become closed off to other ideas. And so it's the same as relationship. You become so attached to a certain relationship, you lose that person, and you feel like you're never going to have that type of relationship again. But you certainly can. You know, you guys are my brothers. I'm lucky to have a lot of friends I consider family. So to me, it's like, yeah, I lost a brother, but we're all going to lose brothers along the way, and we got to just keep doing what we can to enjoy this life.
You're going
to
be a brother that someone's going to lose as well.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I'm really going to take this a whole different direction right now.
Do it.
I'm wondering what you guys think about my theory on death.
All right. Let me tell everybody, before you give your theory on the death, you have a crooked breatherite strip and a ink and headband on with your hair pulled back.
Don't tell Breatherite that I'm... They haven't paid me yet, so he's adding Breatherite on Instagram, and I don't think it's fair. Like maybe when I die, they'll pay me for all the content I've put out for them for free, and free poker final tables that I've had this on for.
I want to hear the theory.
Call me Breatherite. So I have this theory that I've contemplated very often, and it's that, and bear with me, it's that you can't die. You can die, but in the multiverse theory, string theory, right? There's infinite universes.
Sure.
And I think that in any universe in which you die personally, you'll merge into another one where you continuously live. So to you, your brother might be dead, but in this version of reality, he's continuously living, and you guys are living a happy life. It seems like this like picturesque sort of viewpoint, but I've had sort of these horrible things that have happened to me, and I continue, and some of them death defying or some of them whatever, and I constantly think that it's a potential option. It fits some sort of mathematical ability, and also, well, the multiverse is mathematically feasible, so it fits that potential option. And then also, I think we're talking about death, and I think it gives me some sort of like solace in thinking if anyone dies that they're continuously living and I'm living some fantastic other universe with them.
Yeah. I mean, I personally tend to subscribe to a similar theory. I think it's important that we don't get so attached to that idea that we're like, oh yeah, it's all great. They're having a great time in this other universe.
This life sucks.
You don't know.
It allows you to release, though.
It does. It helps. And I mean, my thinking on at the end of the day on all of it is like, we don't know, and we're probably not going to. So how can we act and behave in this life that we do have and live? Well, yeah, that's a whole nother Elon Musk story. But like, how, instead of like worrying and trying to figure it out, which I don't know if it's possible, how do we just learn lessons that give us more power in this life that we know we do have right now, and how do we apply that in a way that is rational and empowering, instead of like sitting around all day like, oh god, do we go to heaven, do we go to hell, do we ashes to ashes, nothing happens.
So philosophical.
It doesn't matter. Like, at the end of the day, I don't think it matters. It's how you use that as a way to move throughout this life that we are in now, that we do know we're experiencing.
It's just like preponderance of not knowing.
Yeah, and it's a tricky, I mean, that's a big part of the human experience, is the mystery of that, and it drives us crazy, and it drives us to religion and to war and all kinds of shit, when it's like, dude, just, we can all just chill out and have fun and dance and listen to music and fuck and, you know, do drugs or drink or whatever you like to do.
Literally a Greek philosopher.
Kind of. Well, I'm not Greek, so not literally, but I guess in a, and maybe going
in another
back
universe
enough,
you are.
Yeah, true.
Kind of, but that sexual repression, though, does make for people getting some great ideas and doing some crazy things, building some amazing technologies.
Yeah, competition drives us in a good direction in a lot of ways, so that does help. But I still think in terms of sex, like, we need a much healthier conversation.
Well, that's obvious.
As a culture about it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's pretty obvious. But
the yin and yang, the death and then sex.
Yeah, it's all about yin and yang. And going back to the shadow element of each of us, you know, I think we're all pretty good, compassionate, kind people, but we all have our darkness, I'm sure. Like, we all have dark thoughts and dark feelings, and it's important that we know that, and that we don't, like, you know, just fool ourselves into thinking we're...
Don't suppress it.
Yeah, let it all out, basically, is my... kind of one of my big philosophies, is just let it all out, because if you don't let it out, it's gonna be much worse when you hold it inside. So
yeah, I think
as long as it's not killing someone, probably don't do that. So if that's what let it out is, don't do that. But let it out in terms of emotional expression or experience that only affects you, you know, fuck.
Do you think we stop that like, media is very suppressive in my mind, so how do you think we stop the suppressive, you know, viewpoint from the media?
I think we already are. You know, things move slow relative to our life experience and to what we see as like a lifetime, but that's a fucking tiny little blip in the timeline of man. So now, as things are, you know, a lot of crazy shit's happening, but I think it's the pendulum moving from one side to the other, and I hope and I think that it'll move to the direction we would like to see it in from here. And I think a lot of conversations are opening up. You know, you guys listen to podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there's a lot more talk about sexuality, all these types of expression, now more than when we were young, and certainly more than our parents' generation. So I think people are opening up slowly but surely. And the potential for psychedelic revolution 2.0, I think, is going to be paramount in this, especially in terms of sexuality, but emotional expression, everything. So yeah, I mean, the news is always going to have, at least until there's a major revolution, the news is going to have a huge control over our consciousness, and when I say our, I don't mean us, but like all of us. And it fucking sucks, but we can only do what we can, you know, in our own lives, really. And, I think all of us are moving into a better space when it comes to all these things. So
I just don't think there's enough personal responsibility still in the individual, though. I mean, okay, the media, yeah, it's, you can watch it, you can listen to it. It's just ingrained. Like, I think people only think that this is how it is, this is how it's always going to be, and this is how it always will be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a big history guy. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, the one we both listen to. He's like, okay, like, just three generations later, these people came and saw these huge statues and monuments. There was a huge die-off, whether it was disease or war, and these people had no idea where this thing came from. And that we have the weapons, we have the technology, we have the capability to wipe each other off in such an easy, easy form. So many easy forms to do that in now. Mm-hmm. From someone accidentally pressing a button to, you know, malfunction somewhere, to ending the world, and there being either limited amount of people to no people, and that a brand new society could start up in 20 years, and new rules could change. Nothing could be known from the ways before. However, because those we have this way of, this is how it is and always will be, we'll never. That's like the hardest thing. I think Aubrey Marcus talked about this on a podcast recently, like having an open sexual relationship with his girlfriend, wife, whatever.
Whitney.
Yeah, and it's like saying like how much he just wallowed, knowing that his partner was with another partner.
Sure.
Now, how much it actually means nothing, you know, in the grand scheme of it. They agreed to it and everything, but still, like, that personal ego holding on to it. And you see that in the small things.
This is mine.
Yeah, you believe in that? Like, there's no way you can believe in that. There's no way that is right, because I've been always told, and people before me told me, that this is how it's supposed to be. And that's it seems like it's the only way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, but we know that's not true.
We forget how minuscule, even though everything is moving so fast.
That's how most people are coded. Most people are coded to believe that what people told me is the right, what I was taught as a kid in school has to be the right way.
Yeah, like indoctrination. I mean, we're all creatures of cultural indoctrination, and some of us are lucky enough to escape that and start asking questions, and others of us settle into a life of informed mediocrity and don't ever try harder.
Informed mediocrity.
And, it's crazy.
That's the title of this, informed mediocrity.
But that's the interesting point we're in now, because everything's growing exponentially now. And information is just so abundant now. But our minds, our bodies, evolutionary, like evolving or biologically, doesn't hold that much information.
For sure.
We can't handle doing all these things, or all these things changing constantly, whether it's even our generation, the generation, whether Z or whatever there are under us, like it's too much.
But like, to me, there's
no one can find a balance with it.
I completely agree. To me, there's information inequality. Like, we have this massive inequality in money. It's information inequality. And it's because of what you're saying, it's because some people are extremely acceptance of asking questions, and they're able to like pull in all this information and learn new things and connect with other people and be open. And then you have the other people who just aren't. And then now they're not pulling in information. So you have people learning like us, pulling in tons of new things, learning from people, connecting and trying to like better ourselves. And the other people who aren't, who are just sort of scale is sliding to me.
Well, that's why it's hard, you know, as a society, we're trying to evolve morally and say, okay, well, people who can't, whether it's learn, don't have the same ability to have the opportunities to, you know, better their lives with an education. Well, do we put that on the state to do that? Well, the state's only going to tell people what kind of things they can learn. And because those people didn't learn everything to get someplace, well.
Oh, it's a paradox.
Well, now how do we support those people if they didn't properly move or evolve away to find a better place to go and do that? So it's like, again, where's the balance? Like, if we want to,
that might be the balance, though. Maybe there, that's a necessary part.
Supposed to die off? Like,
no, maybe there's a need for that part of a humanity. Again, all of this is like, we don't know, really. We don't know shit.
We're just on a bus.
But yeah, but it is
the bus. The bus.
But I wonder a lot of the time, like, if it would be beneficial to our species to have some sort of qualified living standard or something, where you had to meet a certain level of intelligence or competency in order to continue.
Max is nodding.
I kind of think that's an interesting thought. It's kind of a slippery slope to go down with a lot of people, but I think it's important to at least think about it. And
I think it is
with
me too.
At the end of the day, it's like, if we didn't have that like mass of kind of people going with what they're told or whatever, or falling in line,
mm-hmm. I feel
maybe
same.
There wouldn't be the space for, you know, greatness, exceptional humans. Not that we're exceptional, but we are. Or just, you know, business couldn't function. If everybody was smart, how would you make money? Because you wouldn't have a bunch of idiots buying your bullshit. You know, you look at like a lot of these corporate entities and the products they sell, and you're like, what are people doing buying this shit or like buying into this shit? But maybe it's all a necessary part of the game. It's hard to know, really, but there is a diversion. There is a like a polarity, and it's getting stronger between like kind of free thinking, open-mindedness, and rigidity and political ideology and hard stance, right or left type of thinking, which I think is super, super unhealthy and dangerous.
Toxic.
Toxic, that's a better word. Yeah. Openness to me is like the greatest thing, basically. So
I think it's a good thought experiment, sort of me, well, I'm probably going to meditate on this later, just go and try to think of the world. Imagine a world 100 years from now in which all of us are creative, open human beings. I'm talking about the entire race. What would our planet look like? Try to imagine it.
Burning Man!
but
like, would things get done? Would we all be creative artists? Or
would there be no drive?
To end the conversation, do we just have some super intelligent being who's doing everything for us and solving all of our problems?
Well, that's where the neutral ground comes in. No, I would point it towards, because it's like when you... I've wrestled the same thoughts. Okay, what if we have a certain limitation that you need to have a certain set of standards to vote or be a human in our society or civilization? But then again, we're dealing with human beings, and human beings, those certain human beings that are making the decisions and making the rules, they're human beings. They're going to fuck up. They're going to make mistakes because they're human beings. One might run off and just start mating with all the women. One might just run off and steal all the money. One might become a pedo.
Yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot of room for error.
Give it to the robot then. But then the human being designs the robot to set those standards, and now is it just a very intelligent robot using a more, you know, thinking on a more, not rational, but more mathematical scale to what the human being designed it to. So it's...
You're going to have a... I mean, with what you just said, there's a battle between rationality and yes. and math. You're going to have that in the future, because let's say you could have a entity that can solve all of our problems mathematically. It's not going to be perfect, because there's going to be... It's going to leave people in the dark. Like, imagine that question that's in AI right now is, should the car... You know, self-driving cars,
with a trolley experiment.
Yes,
yeah.
Your percentage chance of killing this girl, or do we kill the people in the car?
Mm-hmm.
And that solution can be sort of expounded on and look at. Imagine they can solve this massive worldwide problem, but 150,000 people are going to die, right? All our dreams are going to be solved, but 150,000 people are going to die. Are we going to let that happen? There's too much emotional sort of moral
entanglement.
Involvement.
Yeah.
No, there's not. Just human beings just want perfection, and they can't get perfection even with this brand new technology that's supposed to be perfect. And the fact that it can't be perfect to the faults that we have, we're mad and upset with it. Oh, no, it wouldn't choose me? I'm not driving in that car. No. It's not going to... It's going to save the other person. Oh, they have a better chance of living than I... Oh, how selfish of them. How selfish of the technology.
Yeah.
I feel I'm laughing, but I'm not. Like, I'm laughing inside.
Yeah.
Laughing in pain.
There's a lot of weird things to think about in this life, and especially now more than ever in our lifetime, and maybe ever in human times, a lot of very strange things going on. But we're all playing along and observing it, and my thing at the end of the day is just have fun, man. Just play.
Have fun,
like,
yeah.
Because all
fun.
This, and we overthink too. Humans have a tendency to be in our minds instead of in our bodies. I think that's like maybe our biggest setback, is that we're not enough in our bodies, and that's a whole other conversation. But it's like, yeah, at the end of the day, just use what you learn as motivation to have more fun and joy in your life. So,
so I have a few final questions for you. One of them being, if you could... obviously, I'm too close to the microphone.
Shocker!
That's not my question.
Leaning on the table,
making noise, my run-of-the-muck blum things to do. Wait till we have a podcast with my brother and my dad.
Oh, God.
So, if you could put any artist or entertainer into power, who would you put into power?
Oof. Ooh, wow, that's an interesting one for sure.
You got Brian Shea lifted up from his computer. He's curious at the answer as well.
Artist or entertainer, man. That requires some thought, really. I mean, obviously, like, certain musicians come to mind, because I think musicians tend to have a really beautiful perspective on the world and have open minds and creative minds, which I think are important elements of a good cultural structure. It's hard to think of anybody like in particular. Those questions
Bono?
Are always so tough. I mean, fuck no, not Bono.
it was a joke, Max.
Definitely Kanye.
Max, pull a photo of Bono, please.
Honestly, we were just watching a Lil Dicky music video a little while ago, and it sounds fucking crazy. But
currently,
someone,
I vote as well.
Someone like him, you know, somebody who sees the playfulness and the silliness of life.
I'll say he's Jewish.
And he's a Jew, and Jews run tight ships. I mean, they got some good shit going. But yet,
Kuwaiti listeners aren't going to like that answer.
Basically, anybody who has an open-minded and playful view of the world would be pretty acceptable power. But the problem with that is those people don't want that type of power, and the people who are driven towards that type of power are the people we don't want in power. So it's like a paradoxical question. But if I could like magically snap my fingers and put someone in the presidency, it would be someone who's just silly and playful, like a little Dicky or somebody like that. Anybody who's open-minded, really. But it's never gonna happen, so it's kind of a null question. But I like it.
Maybe a pirate king.
Perhaps
I really a do pirate king, a pirate king, a Viking pirate king. I really do operate under sort of the guise that the way things are currently set up, that I don't want to put in political people who are built off the political system into power.
Of course
I
want to
put someone who's sort of that we force in, who sort of is an incredible person in our society. I'm not talking about an artist or an entertainer. I just wanted to hear who you had to say for that. But someone like some incredible doctor, or make them have 2 years of power in a society or something.
Well, now that you guys gave your optimistic views, there's the pessimistic view. You're going to put someone in, just force them in, or into a system that doesn't work with a bunch of other political savages who are not going to let them get things done.
Yeah, it's obviously we're killing everyone else first.
The problem with that is I think the best system would be we don't need one person in making decisions.
We
need a panel of experts from different fields.
We'll
call
it Congress.
Perspectives, and yeah, we'd like to call it Congress.
The
but
Citadel
we saw
of Ricks.
Yeah, exactly. We need the Citadel of Ricks, and everything will be okay.
Next question. I'm just putting this in here. Time mark this. Cut that out when I was yelling. Thanks. Next question, Brandon.
No,
you said you had multiples.
Yes.
Unless that was just
you're closing to play us out.
Well, I had one that I wanted to ask you earlier, but I it was a somber question, and we just had a bunch of laughs, so I don't think.
Oh, you don't want to go back into
I don't want to go back in time. But if you could go forward in time, and see yourself 10 years from now, what does your dream life look like?
Supportive and loving community of people around me, which I feel like I already have, but a community of people that are, you know, open and exploratory and all those good things. So that's first and foremost, is just having good community. That's something that we're lacking big time in our culture. And also just finding happiness in whatever situation I'm in at the time. I mean, I'm lucky to be doing pretty well in life right now, so hopefully that trend continues, but we never know what roadblocks or hurdles might come. And but ideally, yeah, I'll have a nice community of homies and maybe a few girlfriends, and have healthy relationships that create the potential for shared life experiences, because that's my highest joy, is sharing life experiences with people that I love. So yeah, that would be it.
Ideally, if you could lose your virginity again, how would you do it?
I don't know. I feel like I would do it the way I did, because I'm pretty thrilled with how things have turned out in my sexual development. And so maybe having I lost my virginity to a stripper in a strip club, so it was not the most orthodox way of going about it, but maybe it
would do it again.
Yeah, honestly, it was pretty fun. It was pretty fucking fun. It was way better than I thought it would be. So maybe if
longer than you thought it'd be too.
Yeah, it was a good like 45 seconds.
How old are you?
I was 21.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I waited a while, and my friend said, "That's that. You're gonna lose your virginity," and I was pretty gullible, whatever.
Gullible.
Pretty under the influence of other people at the time, and obviously there's a ton of cultural pressure to not be a virgin by a certain age and all this bullshit. So it was like, you know, a lot of peer pressure, and I was like, all right, fine. And I had dealt with a lot of, you know, stress from that part of my life, feeling a lack there. So yeah, I was like, all right, whatever, and did it, and it was kind of fun, and it opened me up finally to my sexuality, and I'm pretty happy with my development, and so maybe I would do the same thing. But funny quick story with that, I did have an opportunity when I was, I think, 17. I was playing a home game, poker game, with some mobsters in South Florida, and they offered me a buy-in to the game, which would have been about $2,000, to lose my virginity to a hooker that they would pay for at the poker game, and they would get to watch. And that would have been a pretty fucking great story.
So now I know your biggest regret.
So that might be my biggest sexual regret, is not taking that chance, because that just would have been like... But who knows where my life would be now if I didn't. I might be a mobster myself, or I don't know. You never know where life would have taken you, but I look back now and like, I'm like, man, that would have been something. That would have been a unique life experience. Not that losing your virginity to a stripper isn't, but it's probably better more common.
Hooker, I get it.
Well, same shit, but I mean, it would have been interesting to lose it in a voyeuristic way in front of a bunch of filthy old men who are then going to put me in their poker game to take their money.
The comments of Daryl Fish do not represent everybody here at On the Bus podcast.
That's correct.
Hookers aren't strippers, and strippers aren't hookers.
Well, not all, of course, but if you're having sex with a stripper, then...
I didn't say you can say it. I'm just letting people know, you know. This is,
fair enough.
Opinions,
this is a brand.
Yours are not reflected by On the Bus podcast. It's for legal purposes.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. We have nothing against prostitutes or strippers, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Mm-hmm. No, you called them hookers, so...
Whatever.
I don't get caught up in language. That doesn't reflect how we feel about them linguistically.
Okay, fair enough.
Daryl.
They're professionals.
Number two is great. Now you're coming back, so we get number three as well.
Yeah.
He's shaking my hand on camera.
Yeah, as
on microphone.
Camera,
yeah.
On microphone. Did we make it audible enough? We need a louder
just
shake.
Don't lean
sound.
On the table when
shake
you do it.
Shake harder.
Yeah.
Shake harder, guys.
Slap it.
Slap the bass. Thank you, Daryl Fish.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, and I'm sorry I'm leaving so soon, but I'm happy to have been a part of the experience, and hopefully I'll be back in a couple weeks.
I know you're one of our biggest podcasts, so make sure you let everybody know where to find you, and then we're going to play this out live on the outro, so on you.
What? Where we can find you.
Oh, yeah, if anybody's interested.
We know where you
anybody
are.
Who's interested in my life people. Or my thoughts or anything else or wants to reach out, you know, at Daryl Fish on Twitter, Daryl Fish on Facebook, at @tau_of_fish on Instagram. I love connecting with people, so if you have a question or you want to connect in general, you know, by all means. But yeah, that's me. That's the Daryl.
And Daryl just had an incredible huge score playing poker, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Anyone who wants to talk to him about poker, reach out
don't
to him.
Don't do that. Don't reach out. No, that's... I was hoping you wouldn't say that.
That was completely...
Don't know out.
Very much on purpose.
Yeah, if you want staking in your local 1-2 no limit game, I'm sorry, but you can fuck off.
He's talking about... He's talking to me. He's referring to me on that one. Daryl, thanks again. Thank you, everybody, for tuning
thank
in.
You.
Remember, if you like this podcast... Don't just click the subscribe button. Leave us a 5-star review and click that share button, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Tell a friend, family member. Let them know. Let them get on the bus with you. And last but not least, there's our YouTube page. I'm going to let you tell that.
About no, me. I was just going to say, if you want to see the journey and how we got this far, if you want to see Daryl sick and not enjoying himself on the bus ride in the back because we enjoyed the hell out of it, you can go to our YouTube channel. It's at On the Bus Podcast. Also, we have documentary videos. We have... adventure videos. We have bus stops where we do with incredible guests and people. So that's On the Bus Podcast at our YouTube channel. And I can't forget to say this because we need to get... No, I can't say that. Subscribe to the show. Just subscribe. Click the red subscribe button.
Do it.
Subscribe to the show.
And if you want to get on the bus, if you want to collaborate with us, we're collaborating with writers, podcasters, content creators, anybody, moms, dads, brother, anybody who wants to come down, explore this bus with us, explore this journey with us, and connect with us. There's plenty of ways to do that. That's at onthebuspodcast@gmail.com and all of our socials on the bus podcast. Guys, episode 57.
Thank you. Now, Daryl, you can actually get off the bus.
This is the most for those who...